ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
So, Norman, it's not really compulsory to wear a mask kind of anywhere in Australia anymore as of now or in a couple of days. Have you been continuing the trend?
Yeah, so...
Come on, be real with me. I want real talk. No one's listening. It's fine.
No, I haven't been there. I mean, I don't go out if I've got symptoms. I just don't go out if I've got symptoms. And so spread because... I suppose if you were in N95, you'd be okay, but I don't, in terms of protecting other people, really important, and I'm pretty well covered, so I don't wear one myself. Interestingly, I was giving a talk yesterday at a book festival in Sydney, and there was only one person in the audience wearing a mask. So I do find it, and on planes, I do find that there's a small number of people still wearing masks. I get the sense, though, that they're protecting themselves rather than necessarily protecting other people.
Absolutely. I mean, as they can and should. I am a little bit disappointed because early in the pandemic, I invested in some very cute masks, but they were cloth masks. And then according to you and other people in the know, they weren't actually doing very much to protect me. And
no,
I had to sort of, upgrade in one sense and downgrade in a sartorial sense to better N95 masks.
I've still got a pack of N95 masks in my backpack that I carry around with me. So I'm ready for action should it arise. But, I can't lie in a corona cast because people catch me out. If I said I was wearing a mask all the time, we would be swamped by people who've seen me in woolies and said, he's a liar.
People know what the lower half of your face looks like, Norman, and they're not backward in calling it out when they see it.
Yeah, the upper half and lower half, yep. Too much information.
All right, well, let's get into it. It is, of course, CoronaCast, the show all about the coronavirus and sometimes other viral nasties as well. I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor on Jagera and Turrbal land.
And I'm physician and journalist Dr. Norman Swan, speaking to you from Gadigal land, which is part of the Eora Nation.
And Norman, I want to take you back. We were talking about the beginning of the pandemic just now, and take you right back to the beginning, because in the last year or so, we're hearing about a lot of subvariants of Omicron, but they're all part of the Omicron family. But back at the beginning, we were getting a new variant like every couple of months. We had the Wuhan variant, obviously, that's the OG, the original guy who put us into this mess, that late 2019, hence the name. And then we had the Alpha variant, which was sort of seen in the UK. We saw the Beta variant from South Africa, the Delta variant, all in late 2020. And then, of course, Omicron's launch date is etched into my memory because we had just asked the CoronaCast listeners to let us know what they thought we should do.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was actually, we every time we thought we were going to, we'd done CoronaCast to death, and something else happened. So it was almost, we caused it. I think there's a cause and effect relationship, just talking about it.
Yes, it's our fault for every variant that's popped up. But yeah, they were sort of coming in quite thick and fast. And then recently, we've all been kind of in the Omicron vibe family.
Yep, everything's in the Omicron of Omicron, even this BA2.86, the Parola that we talked about last week, it's still part of the Omicron family, just earlier, a sub-variant that comes branched off earlier than the XBB. But yeah, we're all within Omicron. And it's probably why, I mean, at least in Australia at the moment, we've kind of bottomed out. When you look at cases, well, you can't really, we've said this before, you can't really say from cases, but you can look at hospitalizations and deaths, and they're bottoming out as well. We're at very low levels. It's quite likely we're going to get another rise because that's the way it's gone before, and we've got these new subvariants that will come from overseas or evolve here, and we will get another rise. The question is, how high will that be? The rises have been lower and lower. But remember what we said, if they go on for longer, you still get quite large numbers of people infected and involved. But at the moment, we're in a pretty good spot.
And can we talk about the way those numbers work a little bit? Because as we've discussed many times before, when we were doing lots of testing, lots of PCR testing, and then later lots of rapid antigen testing, and people were required to report that, we had really fairly good handle on the numbers. Nowadays, people aren't required to report that. They're probably not reporting a lot of infections. But one thing that is a bit more reliable is hospitalizations and deaths. And while we don't want to see anyone fall into hospital or die from this illness, it does give us a pretty solid sense that there aren't many people getting to that stage with COVID, which either means there's not a lot of it going around, or it's not actually as people aren't suffering as badly as they used to, probably because of previous infection and vaccination.
So it's probably a combination of all those. I think what's happening at the moment. So, for example, I think the rolling average at the time of we're recording this podcast is about 900 nationally, and we were. It wasn't so long ago this year that we were getting 900 in New South Wales alone. So it's not nothing. So it's still a teaching hospital equivalent full nationally, rather than a teaching hospital full, effectively in terms of the number of beds in a single state. So that's still a lot of people taking up beds that could otherwise be free. And I think it's a combination of factors. There are biological factors we'll talk about in a moment, but it's immunization, even though immunization's imperfect in terms of people who've had their boosters. It's antivirals being used probably more effectively and more usefully in high-risk groups and early enough. It's probably that there is a little bit less virus around, therefore not that, you're not getting mass infection at the moment. And there are all sorts of other issues too.
So we're better at it. People aren't falling as sick with it. Is this sort of the beginning of the end of the pandemic phase of COVID?
Well, it depends on how you define pandemic. I think most people who work in HIV would say that HIV is still a pandemic. We just don't talk about it quite as much as we used to, but it's still a pandemic. It's on every continent of the world pretty much. It's better controlled in richer countries with antiretrovirals, but it's still a pandemic. It's affecting every continent in the world. And you can argue that COVID-19 is still a pandemic. It may be at lower levels, but you don't have to have very high levels of an infection for it to be a pandemic. And so we're still in pandemic phase. So it's a bit academic. The question is, how do these things evolve? How do we get to where we are? And it's a really complicated story in terms of how we evolve with a germ.
Mm.
And it's a dance. And it's a dance that's, according to a recent paper, has probably got about 11 variables working that modify this dance. So you've got us. So if you go back in history, us now, probably we have genes that are resistant to plague, the Black Death, to smallpox. Some groups may have some resistance to tuberculosis. It's thought that Scots, for example, have some resistance to tuberculosis that's evolved. Is that people who, one way of catching tuberculosis was by swallowing the germ, the bacterium. And if you've got a high level of acid in your stomach, you probably kill the tuberculosis germ. And Scotland had very high levels of duodenal ulcers.
What?
Which was thought to be a selection process from tuberculosis.
Are you one of those Scots?
So that's an interesting question, because my family came to Scotland from Russia and Ukraine at the turn of the 19th, 20th century. And it's a similar story with Jews living in ghettos, that they probably had a resistance to tuberculosis. And there are diseases, one particular disease in Jewish populations called Tay-Sachs disease, a very nasty genetic disorder of children. And that's a very high prevalence in Jewish populations. And it's thought that if you carry the gene for Tay-Sachs, you also have some resistance to tuberculosis, probably from close living in ghettos.
Oh, this is like sickle cell anemia as well as a evolution against malaria.
Correct. So that's over centuries that you get this genetic effect of when there was no vaccines, there were no antibiotics, and those who survived might have had a genetic propensity or a social propensity. So if you take the Black Death, the highest mortality rates in the 14th and 15th centuries were the poor, who lived in low-lying areas, in poor housing, and the rich, while they got it, did not get it to the same extent. And so housing, how society is constructed and so on, can affect our genes now in that dance of host versus microbe over time. In a modern environment, then you throw in the genetics of the bug. So, for example, with COVID and with flu, they mutate. And COVID is mutating around our defences. So to survive, the new subvariants of COVID are evolving, which can get round our defences. It's not a conscious thing. It's just that there will be millions and millions of these bugs, and one or two of them in all these millions will have, just by the play of chance, will be able to resist our immune system, and they have a survival advantage. So there's the genetics of the bug. There's the temperature outside and whether the bug can, the virus or the bacterium can survive. It's our age. If you're older, you may be able to harbour more of these bugs and spread them more. Your gender may affect this too. There are lots of variables which determine the behaviour of the germ and the behaviour of us and whether we get disease and how many of us get the disease. So we are seeing, thanks to the fact that we've only had Omicron for the last 12, 18 months, we've developed some resistance to the Omicron family. Most of us have had at least two immunizations. Hopefully more of us will get boosters. So we've got background, we've got a combination of the vaccine immunity and natural immunity. Nobody really knows the speed of mutation anymore because we're not really measuring it very well. So the bug is certainly mutating, but maybe not quite as much if there's less around. But we don't know that there's less around.
Okay, so coming back to the question, when would we, what sort of is the hallmark of the end of the pandemic phase of COVID?
Nobody knows the answer to that question.
I thought you were going to give me something really tidy there.
Maybe somebody does, but I don't. I think that what we're seeing here is a relatively quiescent period due to high background immunity. And I think that the best way to look at this is a bit like influenza, even though it's a very different bug from influenza, is that influenza, we have seasonal influenza. And by the way, COVID is not yet seasonal. So some people say that when COVID-19 is seasonal, that's the end of the pandemic and it's not yet seasonal. So that's what some people say. But it's going to be more like influenza, where in this case, not seasonal, but it comes and it goes in waves. And that every so often, and it might be every 10 years, every 15 years, or every 8 years, we don't know, there'll be a new pandemic version of COVID-19, which has gone into animals, spun out, we're not used to it, and it rages against our inadequate immunity, and we succumb in large numbers again, although we've got technology now to help defeat that. But you know, with flu, nobody's complacent about flu, and nobody should be complacent about COVID-19 moving forward.
Oh, well, we'll keep our eyes on it then, Norman, but we'll leave it there for this week.
See you next time.
See you then.